Welcome to God Knows Where. I'm Brett Harris. We are healing hands today instead of legs. Well, not us, but Jesus. Jesus is healing hands today, not legs. And the story we've got from Matthew, Mark, and Luke shows us how we can learn to heal others like Jesus, especially when folks come to us, when they come looking for us for help. Thanks for listening to the show, y'all. I've been having some really great conversations about the podcast with others over the past couple of weeks, and I'm marinating on some new ideas for us here. So I'm hoping to get time to dig into them all more in the coming weeks and bring them to you soon. So keep listening out for what's ahead, and thanks for being here. And don't forget to check out Good Faith Media. They've got a host of resources and books and study guides, not to mention podcasts and documentaries to check out that might help you if you're leading small groups or if you want to just study things on your own. Check out Good Faith Media. They're even hosting a writer's retreat that I'm looking at attending later this year. You can find out all about what's going on at Good Faith Media, all the things that they have to offer and all the things that they're doing out in the world at goodfaithmedia.org. Check them out. That's it for now. I hope you enjoy today's episode, Handout. A reading from Luke 6. On another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and taught, and there was a man there whose right hand was withered. The scribes and the Pharisees watched him to see whether he would cure on the Sabbath so that they might find an accusation against him. Even though he knew what they were thinking, he said to the man who had the withered hand, "Come and stand here." He got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to destroy it?" After looking around at all of them, he said to him, "Stretch out your hand." He did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. Why do we go to church? I know you can't really answer me right now, but this is not a rhetorical question. And I also know there are lots of different reasons for each of us about why we go to church or why we don't go to church. But I want you to think about that. Pause this episode if you need to so you can think about it or talk through it with whomever is in the car or the kitchen or wherever you are, whoever's around you. Feel free to talk through it with them. Why do we go to church? We go to church to worship God, and we go to church to find community. And if we have kids, we go to church to help them learn how to live and to love. And we go to church because for many of us, I think that's just what we've always done on Sunday mornings. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, there are times, maybe more than we'd like to admit, that we also go to church in search of healing. We go looking for an encounter with the divine or with our neighbors or maybe even with strangers that will help us move forward from a past that has hurt us and continues to haunt us. Strangely enough, I also think this is why so many of us leave church. We've gone searching for the healing we need, and we haven't found it. And too often, not only have we not found it, but what we have found are words and interactions that have reinforced the wounds that we carry, that have opened them back up and reminded us of all that pain. Twice since I left the pulpit in 2022, opportunities have presented themselves for me to get back to church, to get back to showing up for all those good reasons I mentioned at the beginning. And within days of each opportunity, there have been conversations that reopened some of those wounds I've carried from being a pastor. No one said or did anything to hurt me, but the directions of those conversations and the thoughts they brought up in my mind reminded me that there's still so much work I need to do. I'm still healing. And that's why I need this story. I think that's why we all need this story, because this story is about hope. It's the hope of one man in need of healing, the hope we all have in Jesus, the hope we can offer to others if we learn to follow Jesus' example, and the hope we can find and hold on to if we're brave enough to walk into places we're unsure of. Because this man shows up in this synagogue in this town that Jesus just so happens to be teaching in that Sabbath day. He's full of hope. None of the writers who tell us this story, not Matthew, not Mark, not Luke, none of them tell us that this man went in search of healing. But the fact that he's there in that synagogue to worship proves to me that he has hope. Hope that God will continue to be a persistent presence in his life. Hope that a reading from the Torah or the prophets might inspire him that week. Hope that he might encounter someone and have a great conversation and be encouraged to come back, to continue to be a part of that community. He shows up with hope. And it's also apparent to me that even before he showed up with that sense of hope, this man did what my good friend did in hopes of meeting one of his idols. He read the signs all around him. I have a friend who's probably Dave Matthews' biggest fan. Also, being 90s kids, he and I have talked about doing a crossover episode of our podcast, a la Full House and Family Matters, but for the purposes of this story, he's a huge Dave Matthews fan. He could tell you how many times he's seen Dave Matthews Band in concert, but I know that I can't count that high. Some time ago, he'd taken a trip, and part of that trip was to see this band play again. And an offhand comment from a tour guide tipped him off to where the band might be staying, and having seen them enough, he had a general idea of when they might be around town as opposed to rehearsing at the venue they were playing. So he walked around and he went to this hotel bar for a drink. And not long after he arrived, here comes the band through the lobby. My friend got to meet this musician who's profoundly influenced his life, and it was everything he could have hoped for and more. And he was only able to do all that because he paid attention to what was going on around him in that city. And this man with the withered hand is no different. Jesus has been all over this region, teaching and healing and doing his thing, and now he's in the same town where this man finds himself. So knowing that it's the Sabbath and that Jesus was likely to come either to teach, as Luke tells us, or simply to worship, this man went. Armed with the knowledge that Jesus was in town and filled with the hope of what that might mean for him, he enters the synagogue. And what does he find there? He finds a religious community that's not unlike ours. It's a space filled with ritual and routine, and on this particular Sabbath, Jesus. He finds himself in a place filled with rules about who can do what and when certain practices are allowed and why others are expressly forbidden. And there are people around him who aren't sure if they should speak to or welcome this man into the synagogue. They also aren't sure what Jesus will do. Will Jesus uphold their rituals and their routines, or will he speak to and welcome and maybe even heal this man in the synagogue that Sabbath? I have to imagine for this man there was a point, maybe as he was walking into the synagogue, that he wondered, when I go in here, am I going to find the healing power and presence of Jesus in there that many have found elsewhere? Or am I going to be met with the policy and procedure of religion that I've encountered before that's kept me unhealed, the parts of the tradition that have made it hard for me to find healing until now? But even that possibility didn't keep him from hoping to find healing once he walked inside. Having worked in as many churches as I have over the years, there are so many stories I could share about folks like this man walking into one of our churches filled with hope and the varying responses that they got when they walked in the door. I could tell those stories for hours, but what's important to share today is not the specifics of those stories, but how many times folks who came in search of some measure of healing, food or gas money or help with a bill, whatever they came for, how many of them came and received the policy and procedure line from me instead of the power and presence of Jesus within our community? And how much guilt did I feel for days after each of those encounters? And how much guilt did I feel also in the times when I skirted the policies and ended up helping folks out on Sunday mornings? The whole thing was surrounded with this feeling of guilt that I had. And these communities that I served, me included in them, We were okay when folks came seeking healing in the form of prayer during the worship services, but less so when they came looking for tangible help to improve their lives in that moment. We had appointed times when they could ask for prayer, and we were clear that they were always welcome to come and join us for worship. But every church that I serve also had policies about giving out cash assistance and providing these meaningful, tangible ways of healing there on those days, feeling that it would be much less disruptive to the Sunday morning activities if they just came back on Monday morning. And all these folks who came in, they always knew to ask for the pastor. Now, whether I was the pastor or not in these churches, folks looking for healing always knew to ask for the pastor. Because so many of our churches are set up in ways that cement the pastor as the provider of the community's charity, not the community itself. I mean, very rarely was I the first person these folks encountered in all these churches, but I was often and almost always the last. And to make it worse, whatever I decided in those moments and conversations with them when they had come to me looking for healing, whatever I decided, whether it was to help them find healing like Jesus or to turn them away on technicalities like the religious leaders in that synagogue, the folks who came in search of healing almost always left our church and went to another church, and then left that one to go to another one and another until they'd been shunned all the way around, or until they'd cobbled enough together to help them repair what was broken in their life that day. And all of us pastors in all of these communities knew this, and we'd talk about it regularly, and we'd ask each other if so-and-so had been by this week and let them know what story we'd heard from them to line them all up and make sure that we weren't getting played by someone looking to take advantage of our generosity. But reading this story this week made me think differently about all that. It made me lament again how I've hindered folks from finding healing inside the church, how often we fall into the trap that meeting needs folks present to us when they're brave enough to bring them to us in the church somehow could hurt the church or hinder it from being able to help more people, how it could set dangerous precedents. Because as I read about this man, having read all the signs about where he might meet Jesus, where he might be able to find Jesus and come into his presence in a meaningful way, and how providential it was that he did, I couldn't help but wonder what might have happened if Jesus wasn't there. What if he'd come into that synagogue and not found Jesus? What if people come into our churches and don't find Jesus' healing presence there? And what if they, like so many I've known over the years, keep bouncing from church to church to church looking for help, not because they're attempting to play anyone, but because they keep going from place to place simply hoping to find Jesus, that healing presence of Jesus in the midst of a community, and they keep struggling to find it everywhere they look. That the ways we choose policy over people makes it hard for them to find Jesus in the places they think he'd most likely be. When people come to our places of worship in search of healing, physical, emotional, spiritual, whatever, what do they find? Do they find the healing they're searching for? Or do they find all the reasons they can't be healed? What do we offer them when they come to us? Cold words from a distance? Or a hand that reaches out to help them renew their strength? This story shows us what Jesus offers them, and it makes it pretty clear what we should too. This story gives us hope. It gives us hope that healing can be found in the places that we go to worship. It can be found when we pay attention to where Jesus is showing up. That it can be found when we make room for Jesus in those spaces. Healing can be found when we're brave enough to go looking for it, and when we're bold enough to take time to stretch out our hands like Jesus. God Knows Where is written, produced, and edited by me, Brett Harris, with music by Thomas Steinwinder and Michael Trest, and unwavering support from my wife, Elizabeth. If you like what you hear, I'd encourage you to share God Knows Where with your friends and family and give us a review in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this show. It would mean the world to me, and it'll help more people find God Knows Where. Thanks in advance for your help and for being here and for listening. Until next time, take these words from William Sloan Coffin with you. May God give you the grace never to sell yourself short. Grace to risk something big for something good. Grace to remember that the world is too dangerous for anything but truth and too small for anything but love. So may God take your minds and think through them, your eyes and see through them, and your hearts and set them on fire.